going to read it together. You'll find it in the middle of the order of service. It's taken from three passages in the first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis. The first section is from Genesis chapter 2, verses 49, then Genesis 2, 15 to 17, and then Genesis 3, 17 to 19. These are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created. In the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens, when no brush of the field was yet in the land, and no small plant of the field had yet sprung up. For the Lord God had not caused it to rain on the land, and there was no man to work the ground. And a mist was going up from the land, and was watering the whole face of the ground. Then the Lord God formed the man of dust from the ground, and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And the man became a living creature. And the Lord God planted a garden in Eden in the east, and there he put the man whom he had formed. And on the ground the Lord God made it to spring up every tree that is pleasant to the sight and for good food. The tree of life was in the midst of the garden, and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The Lord God took the man and put him in the garden of Eden to work it and keep it. The Lord God commanded the man, saying, "You may surely eat of every tree of the garden, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat. For in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die." These next words are taken from the third chapter of Genesis, and they come after man has done what God told him not to do. And this is what God says to man after Adam had eaten of the tree that God told him not to eat of it. "And to Adam he said, 'Because you have listened to the voice of your wife, and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow you shall eat bread, till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return.'" Well, it is good to see you all here. It's great. And the Lord has blessed us this last two nights. We have been looking at these questions that have been before us. And we have seen that God gives us very simple answers to what seem to be very complicated issues. And tonight will be no different. Why do we die? And then what? During the worship, or the duration of this worship service this evening, approximately 6,100 people across the world will have died. That's 102 people each minute. Since I began this sentence, 5 people have died. But have you ever thought about the reason why people die? It's a question which you would think would dominate and demand huge column inches of the media. A question which should consume billions of the world's dollars, pounds, yen, euro, whatever currency that should be invested in research every year. Millions and millions of dollars, pounds, yen, euro are spent in research trying to find cures for the great illnesses of our day, whether it be cancer, heart disease, AIDS. And the attempt is to prolong life. And those efforts are to be encouraged and they're to be applauded. But much time is spent seeking to find an answer to the question that lies behind all those causes of death. the question of why do human beings die? If we are serious about prolonging life, then surely it is a question that should demand the attention of the world. The world is consumed with this concept of living for as long as it can, and rightly so. But why is there little or no research done into the actual reason for death, apart from the research done into the causes of death? Surely, following the billions of so-called evolved years that the world has existed, you would think by this stage in the world's history that there would be an overwhelming desire on the part of humanity to not just simply find the reasons and the causes of death, but the underlying reason as to why we actually die. Looking on the internet and asking the question why we die, I found and was surprised to find only 4 items on the reason why we die. Here's a couple of extracts from those handful of articles. One reads, "We die naturally. Our bodies become physically incapable to work at a certain age, usually around 70 years old. We die usually of old age, but other reasons like murder and sickness can lead to death also." I thought to myself, well, that's really enlightening. We die because we get old, and we die because someone murders us or we get sick. Here's another one. "It is true that living cells have a finite lifespan, but that doesn't mean that the organism simply dies because the cells are old. Instead, genetic mutations, diseases, and damaging effects of the environment can foster a specific disorder or disease. As people get older, their cells simply don't work as well and can't stave off disease as easily or health as well as they once could. As a result, older people may die from injuries or diseases the younger person would easily survive. But nothing dies from simply old age." So, we die because we have living cells that have a finite lifespan. They're limited. But then the writer tells us that we don't die because cells are old. They have a finite lifespan, but they don't die because they're old. No, it takes a contributing factor like a genetic mutation. But then as people get older, he says, their cells don't work as well. Now, by this point, I'm totally confused. I'm confused because he says, cells have a finite lifespan, but we don't die because we get old. We need some other genetic mutation. But then we do die because cells don't work as well. So you're going round in circles. Do our cells not work as well? Do they die or do they not die? You're left wondering. And then at the end he says, we die not simply because we grow old. So if you can make head or sense of that, then I know my intelligence is limited, but there it is. Then I stumbled upon the Big Think website. It's a website that asks questions of leading authorities in their fields. I typed in, "Why do we die?" And I was genuinely, pleasantly surprised when I saw an interview had been posted 2 weeks ago on the internet in this website entitled, "Why We Die." So I thought, now I'm going to get the answer. The person interviewed is a Professor Tyler Volk. He's Professor of Biology at New York University. He's an author of a number of books on the theme of life and death. And I thought, here we go. At last, all this trolling on the internet has paid dividends. I listened to the interview, and the nearest that he came to in the entire 27-minute, 24-second interview to answering the question, "Why do we die?" is as follows, and I quote him. "The body wears down after a while. There are repair mechanics that we have, or repair mechanisms rather, not mechanics. You cut your skin, you'll notice that your skin repairs. You break a bone, the bone repairs. Many of these repair mechanisms, as any of us who are aging know, become less efficient as we get older. And one reason that diseases become more statistically probable as we get older has to do with the general running out of these repair mechanisms. The efficiency of these repair mechanisms that were with us from our birth as human beings, but have themselves a kind of longevity that varies from individual to individual. But you can see most people, when they get to around 70, 80 or 90, they're getting to look just old. There are some certain exceptions. So there is some commonality we have as human, as a species, in terms of shared genetic capabilities of repair our bodies that wear down over time. Repair mechanisms become less efficient as we get older and wears down over time. So there we have a leading authority telling us that we get old because our bodies stop working. Repair mechanisms. Now, I don't want to be cynical, and I don't want to strike a cheap preacher's joke, but here we have a top professor of biology, a specialist in his field, and as far as he is concerned, we die because the repair mechanisms we have become less efficient as we get older. Now, surely the next question the interviewer should have asked was, but why do we die? You haven't answered the question. You've said that the repair mechanisms of our bodies degenerate. But why do those repair mechanisms degenerate? You said that by the time someone gets 70, 80 or 90, then they're just getting old. They're not working as well. Well, it doesn't take to be a professor at a top university in the world to understand that our bodies don't work as well as we're 70, 80 or 90. Where is the question that begs to be asked? If you have researched this and studied this, is this the best you can come up with? We die simply because the repair mechanisms in our bodies cease to function as well when we get old. Is that the reason for it? Surely anyone with any intellectual integrity would say, give me something that is of consequential value based on all the research you have done. Because that's of no value. Anybody off the street could tell you that your body doesn't repair as well as you get older. If you're going to tell us why we die, give us something real. He couldn't. There's nothing there. That was the best that they had in 27 minutes, 24 seconds. Even though the next question he was asked was, why do human beings have so much trouble embracing death? Well, that's a philosophical question. That's not a scientific issue. It's nothing to do with science, why people find it difficult to embrace death. It's purely philosophical. It's purely what's in the head. The scientists can't give an answer why we die. And the reason for that is very simple. Man doesn't have an answer to the question of why we die. Man never has had an answer. Man will never have an answer to the question of why we die. It's an accepted fact that we die. But no one has ever explained with any sense, the reason why we as human beings die. Yes, they can give us the causes of death, but as to the reason why we die, there's a total void. They are ignorant. They are clambering about in the darkness. And you would think that here is one of the most significant questions that human beings can face. Why does this life we have come to an end? That question should surely dominate all our thinking. But it doesn't. There is an answer to the question why we die. And as we found on Monday night, when we asked the question, why do children say no? And we saw last night when we asked the question, why do bad things happen to good people? The answer is very, very simple. The problem, of course, is that with simple answers, we as human beings find it very difficult to accept them. We want to hear a lot of words that will somehow explain it, but never really get to the real issue. I don't want to make any political statement tonight, but I'm sure that you'll hear a lot of interviews in the next month with television pundits and with politicians, and they'll be asked very direct, specific questions, and you'll get very general, nebulous answers. And there'll be times when you want to just jump into the television and just scream at the guy and say, just answer the blinking question. Don't give us your manifesto or stop rubbishing the other party. Just answer the question you've been asked. But you see, it's not just politicians who do not and refuse to answer questions. We all do it because we don't want to face the truth. And the answer that we have as to why we die is incredibly simple. It's phenomenally simple. And I've been praying, especially today, that those of you who do not understand the reason why we die, that God will help you by opening your ears to hear and your eyes to see, that He will genuinely help you to get it tonight. The reason why we die is because of sin. If you go back to your order of service and you read there the section in terms of Genesis chapter 2, it speaks about how God made man in the beginning. Verse 7 it says, then the Lord God formed the man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And man became a living creature. Now again, if you're not prepared to accept these words of how creation or the world came into existence, if you are following what I would call to be a lie evolution, then you've got to, as I work through this material, you have got to, with honesty and integrity in your heart, you've got to be working through the answer to the question, why we die. It's not just good enough for you to turn around and say, I don't want to hear about God and about what God has done and the creation of God, because that never took place. The world has evolved. If you're going to take that route of following that line of argument, then you have to go to your logical conclusion of that position, and you have to address this question honestly for yourself. You've got to address it. What I'm bringing to you tonight is what God, the Creator of heaven and earth, has revealed to us concerning how He established this world by His creative power through His spoken word. And we read there in verse 7 that God formed man from the dust of the ground and He breathed into man the breath of life. Then in verse 8 we read that God established a garden in Eden. And in that garden there were trees, and there was a tree in the midst of the garden, verse 9, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Now this tree was not any particularly special tree. There was nothing peculiar about it. It wasn't any more rainbowish in its style or color. It was a fact that this tree was identified by God as one which this man, Adam and his wife, were not to eat of the fruit of. That's what made it different. It was God had identified it as the one that they were not to eat of. God, we read then, verse 15, put Adam into the garden and Eve, and they were given the responsibility of working the garden and keeping it. And God gave Adam a very clear instruction. He says, you can eat of any tree in the garden, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall not eat of it, for in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die. Now there you have it. There you have the reason why we die. It's not because we grow old. It's not because the repair mechanisms in our body cease to be as efficient as they are when we are a teenager in our 30s and our 40s. It's not because our cells deteriorate, but we don't die because we get old, but our cells deteriorate. There's no confusion here as to the reason why we die. God explicitly and clearly commanded man, this is what you're to do and this is what you're not to do. And if I had the time tonight, I would take you through the events of the next chapter in the Bible, Genesis chapter 3, and I would reveal to you what took place that resulted in the man eating of this fruit. But if you will bear with me and accept that that's what happened. And that having happened, then God came in search of the man, and the man hid. And the man did what men do. The man blamed his wife. And the wife got the blame for taking it and doing that which was wrong. And the wife blamed the serpent. And the serpent had nobody to blame. So there the blame game ended. And God came into the equation. And God said, right, I've given you life. I blessed you with perfection. I commanded you to enjoy this world in which I placed you. And I only put one single solid restriction upon you, and that was not to eat of this tree. And that was to demonstrate to me that you love me. That was to demonstrate that you love me. Because if you did not eat of it, then you were showing that you were accepting me for who I am. The tree wasn't put there to trip them up. It wasn't that God was sitting there saying to himself, oh, I'll put this tree here, and I'll put it there, and I'll tease, and I'll taunt them, and I'll see if they can resist it. No, God was saying, you can eat of all the trees. But what I want you to do is to show me that you really love me by accepting what I say about this tree, and you obey me, and you don't eat of it. Just show me that you love me, and that you'll accept my word, both positively and negatively. That you will do what I ask you to do, and that you will not do what I ask you not to do. Demonstration of love. But they didn't. And because God says, verse 17, you have listened to the voice of your wife, and have eaten of the tree which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. There are these then series of curses upon the man. And the final curse is this, for your dust, and to dust you shall return. There is why we die. We die because our first father took the loving commands of God and willfully and openly and deliberately disobeyed. He took all the gracious provisions of God and he threw them back in God's face. That is the reason why we die. Now, you can accept that, or you can deny it. It's reiterated again in the New Testament in the letter that Paul wrote to the church at Rome. For in Romans chapter 5 we read, therefore just as sin entered the world through one man, and death through sin, so death spread to all men. Why are you going to die? You're going to die because of sin. You're going to die because you were conceived, as we saw on Monday night, you were conceived in sin. Not the act of sexual intercourse is not a sinful act when engaged in between a married man and a married woman. That's not what he's saying. He's saying it's a consequence of your being conceived from the seed of Adam that you're a sinner. And because you're a sinner by nature, and because you're a sinner by thought, word, and deed, therefore you will die. The world doesn't want to know that. The world will not piece that together. The world will not accept that reality. And the reason why the world will not accept that truth concerning what death is, because if you accept that that's what death is, then you have to accept the cause of death. And the cause of death is not cancer. The cause of death is not kidney failure. The cause of death is not being knocked down by a car. The cause of death is not some other illness or some other accidental event. The cause of death is your sin. And you see, the world doesn't want to accept that, because if you accept the cause of death as being sin, then you have to face the reality of who you are as a human being. And we're all good people in here tonight. Well, anybody who was here last night will realize that there's no one in here tonight that's good. Because God says, as we sang in Psalm 14 and as we read in Romans chapter 3, there is no one good. There is no one who does good. Because we're all sinners. And I would long for you tonight, if you do not accept this truth, that the Spirit of God would drive it home. I can speak it with as much clarity as I can muster. I can read it from the Bible clearly to you, but I know in my heart of hearts that unless the Spirit of God works, you're just not going to accept it. You're not going to accept that which is staring you straight in the face. You're not going to accept the simple answer to this question that even the leading professors in the field of today flap about at and can give no answer to. And the reason why you're not going to accept it unless the Spirit of God opens your eyes to see and your ears to hear is because you're still living as Adam lived. You're still saying to God, I will do it my way. The reason we die is because of sin. The idea that we die, and that is simply the end, is not true either. Because we read that the wages of sin is death. The payment that we receive for living our sinful lives is death. And that's not just the physical death at the end of our lives. That's just not when our bodies cease to function and the scalometer on the dial just goes flat. That's talking about a totally different aspect of death. An aspect of death that follows death. Death is not the end. Far from it. The truth is that death is merely the beginning. What awaits man in his natural state is almost unspeakable. What follows after death for man in his natural state as a descendant from Adam is horrific. Is horrific. Many in our society today think that the truth concerning the place that is hell is a joke. TV ads, comedians, popular television shows, Hell's Kitchen, Hell's Pizza Delivery, Hell's PC, it's all a joke. It's all a joke. The word hell is like a throwaway comment. It's a word that comedians use in their jokes to try and stimulate some sort of reaction. And yet the truth concerning this place that awaits those who die is unspeakable. It's a real place. I could take you to a number of passages in the Bible tonight, sections which record the words of Jesus, the Son of God, in which he specifically speaks about hell. He is very, very clear. There's no ambiguity in the words of Jesus. There's no sense of thumping the pulpit and shouting these words out. He speaks of them with great clarity when he says, "Then he will say to those on his left, 'Depart from me, you cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels.'" And are you thinking at this moment, oh, here we go again with this fire and brimstone stuff. Well, I'm reading you what Jesus says. I'm not giving you what I think. This is not said for effect. I'm not here to try and scare you. That's not the point. What I'm here to do is to bring you the truth concerning the reality of what will happen to you after you die. This is not me making it up just for effect. This is God in the person of His Son speaking to you clearly about the reality of what awaits you. For I was hungry and you gave me no food. I was thirsty and you gave me nothing to drink. And these will go away into eternal punishment. Eternal punishment. Do you realize that Jesus Christ, during His lifetime, spoke more about God's wrath and hell than He did about God's love and heaven? If you were to actually go through all the words that Jesus speaks that are recorded in the New Testament, and you were to add up the words that He speaks about love and heaven, and you were to add up the words that He speaks about wrath and hell, do you know which one would come out on top? Which one would you think of would come out on top? If I was to ask you tonight before you come into the building, and to say to you, will you fill in a wee bit of paper? Will you tell me of all the words that Jesus speaks in the Bible, love and heaven, hell and wrath, which comes first? What percentage do you think that love and heaven comes above heaven or hell and wrath? Would you say 90% about love and heaven and 10% wrath and hell? Would you have said 80% love and heaven, 20% hell and wrath? Well, do you know what the reality is? The reality of the Son of God actually spoke more about the wrath of God and the hell of God than He does about the love and heaven of God. And why did He do that? Because He wanted to confront people with the reality of who they are. That's the love of God. The love of God is that He actually tells people the truth. Satan, the father of lies, is the one who says, you don't need to worry about this nonsense. You don't even know why you came here tonight to listen to this nonsense. You only came to hear why people die, and there He is blathering on about hell. Satan doesn't want you to hear. Why does He not want you to hear? Because He is the one who came to Adam in the beginning and said, don't listen to God. God doesn't want you to enjoy life. You want to come with Me. And where did that answer, where did that response to that going after Satan take Adam and Eve? Where did it take us? It's taking us to our deaths. It's taking us to hell. When are you going to listen and waken up and realize that when you listen to Satan, you're listening to the one who leads you to death? You listen to the one who is leading to destruction. He's the one who wants to destroy your life, your mind, your body, your soul. He doesn't want you to embrace the things of God. He doesn't want you to accept the things of God. Why? Because He hates God. He hates God with a vengeance. When God created him and he was in the glory, he rebelled against God. And he said, I'm not having anything you tell me. Not having you. And God banished him from His presence. And since that day on, Satan has had one agenda in mind. Anything that is God's or belongs to God, I'm going to destroy. And he comes, and he comes with such niceness. And he comes and he says to us, this is the wonderful way to do it. This is the enjoyable way to do it. We all know it as young people. When we were young people, he would come to us and say, you're missing out on the real things of the world. This religion business, let it wait. It'll come later in life. You come and have a good time now. Well, many young people who darkened the doors of churches, this church in past years, in decades in the past, listened to the words of Satan. And they said to him, come, you can come back when you're 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 or 70. Come back and take religion later. Where are they tonight? Are they sitting in their midst delighting in the things of God? No, they're not. Does Satan care about them? No, he doesn't. I can well remember the words of my mother when she came out, having met with my grandfather, my father's father, for the last time, as he lay in his deathbed, a man who had consumed and had drunk himself out of 2 farms, 11 children, and he drunk his family out of 2 farms. And he said, Kathleen, he says, I think my life is coming to an end. And I can see Satan at the end of the bed, and he's standing there and he's saying, find your own way home. Find your own way home. And many nights my grandfather sat in a public house and Satan said to him, you have a good time tonight, won't you? You'll have a good time tonight. When it came to the hour of his death, it was, you find your own way home. Where was the hand of friendship then? When was the old pals act then? find your own way home. Hell is a real place. It's not a metaphor. Hell is not being with other people. This nonsense that, oh, hell is being with other people. There's never any as much nonsense being talked in life as to say hell is being with other people. It's a real place. It's a real place of real punishment. We're living at a time in the history of the Western world where punishment is a byword for give them another chance. 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 Many chances do people need? The Bible tells us that God will punish all men. Jesus says in Matthew 25, these will go away into everlasting punishment. Paul says in 2 Thessalonians 2, 1-9, these will be punished with everlasting destruction. God says He will punish. He will punish them for their sin. Lamentations 3:38, He will punish them for their iniquity. Jeremiah 36:31, He will punish them for their idolatry. Leviticus 26:30, He will punish them for the rejection of their law. Hosea 4:6 and 9, He will punish them for their evil thoughts and deeds. Jeremiah 21:14, He will punish for their pride. Isaiah 10:12, their unbelief. 11:20, Romans, covetousness. Isaiah 57:17, disobedience towards God. Ephesians 5:6, disobedience towards the gospel. 2 Thessalonians 1:8, do you want me to keep going on and on and on and on? And the punishment will be just. No one will say of God. No one will say of God. This is unfair. There'll be no miscarriages of justice. God makes it very clear in His Word. Every single person will be punished according to their own personal level of disobedience towards God. He will punish them on the basis of what they have known and on the basis of the decisions they have taken. Jesus says, the servant who knew his master's will and did not do according to that, which will be beaten with many stripes, but he who did not know will be beaten with few. Everyone to whom much is given from him, much will be required, and to whom much has been committed to him, they will ask more of. In other words, tonight, you by your presence in this building and hearing this word, you will suffer more than many people in the world, because there are many in the world who will never hear this gospel message. Never hear this gospel message. And if you sit and hear this time after time after time, and you reject it time after time after time, then you're storing up for yourself eternal judgment. That which you know, that which you do not do, you will receive punishment for. You'll not be punished for what other people think of you. It doesn't matter what other people think of you. It's immaterial. Immaterial. You'll be punished for what you knew and what you did not do. It's amazing when you talk to folk whose parents are beginning to lose their mind. And they're able to go back 10, 30, 40, 50 years ago, and they could tell you anything about themselves 30 years ago. It's not a phenomenal capacity of the mind. We can't remember things that would... I can't remember some things that happened last week. Can't remember it. But the truth is that there will maybe come a time in my life when I'll not be physically remember what I'm doing today, but I maybe only remember what I did in the 1970s with clarity. What does that tell us about our minds? That our minds never forget anything. Never forget anything. It's locked in there. There's some incredible capacity that God has given us to retain that information. And we will know when God says to us, you sat and you listened. And none of us will stand up and say, but you've got the date wrong. You've got the time wrong. Because we will know that we got the date right and we got the time right. And He will say, you heard it. And we will say, you're right. I did hear it. And God said, I'll punish you for hearing it and not obeying. And you'll say, you're right. There'll be none of this. This is not fair business. Because we will know, we will be honest. For the first time in our lives, we will be faced with the reality and we will be honest. And this saying one thing and doing another thing, for the first time in our lives, will be banished. Banished. It's going to be a terrible experience. Cast into a place of outer darkness, Jesus says. The place of agonizing pain, Jesus says, weeping and gnashing of teeth. A place of shame and contempt. A place where God will pour out his anger. Those in hell will drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which has poured out full strength into the cup of his indignation. The unspeakable wrath of God, we have no comprehension of it at all. No comprehension of it. You see, we don't see how holy God is. We don't see the rottenness of our own sin. We're just a wee bit bad and God's just a wee bit good. It's unreal that the wrath of God will be poured out upon man and woman for their sin. He will not presence himself with them in hell. All that is good in their life will be removed. Do you know that you rise every day and the sun's there? You receive blessing from God's hand every day, whether you accept it or not. Whether you give thanks to him or not, he gives it to you. He gives you your health. He gives you your strength. He gives you every blessing that you could have. Do you know that the blessings you receive every single solitary day of your life, even the worst day in your life on earth, that day in hell you will never see again. That day in your life when you wish it would all just end and all just go away and life would just start again. That day that frightens you, when you think about that day that has been so bad in your life that you break out in a sweat, the hairs in the back of your neck stand up, whatever that event was, whatever that person said, whatever those words were, that day that you horrify to go back to, that day you will look forward to in hell as though it was the best day, unbelievable day in your life on earth. It's an appalling prospect. And it will never, ever end. Never end. The contempt will be everlasting, Daniel 12, 2. The fire will be everlasting, the punishment everlasting, Matthew 25. The burnings will be everlasting, Isaiah 33. The vengeance will be forever, Jude 7. The blackness will be forever, Jude 13. The torment will be forever, Revelation 14. The damnation will be eternal, Matthew 3. The destruction will be everlasting, 2 Thessalonians 1, 9. The death will be everlasting, Romans 6, 3. Day in, week in, week out, year in, year out. Decade after decade, century after century, millennia after millennia, and pain and wailing and groaning and gnashing, souls filled with torment, consciences that are ever accusing, separated from the love and the goodness and the mercy and the hope of God. There's no hope of deliverance. You see, tonight, if the Spirit of God will work in your life and he'll open your eyes to see and your ears to hear, and if he'll give you a new mind to actually embrace it, and a heart, if he would give you that heart that would say, come and receive this truth. And you were to cry, God, give me mercy. Be merciful to me tonight. Bring me from this death. Bring me into a new and a living hope. If you cried out to God in the Spirit of God, then God would come tonight and he would bring you from death to life. But if you wait that day and you think that somehow when you get post-death, and if in your head at this moment in time you'll say, well, how are you sure I'm going to hell? How can you be sure? You don't know what sort of person I am at. What right do you have to judge me? I'm not judging you. I don't need to judge you. You see, the sentence has already been explained. Man's condemnation is not something that's going to be determined in the future. It's already been decided. It's already been declared. It doesn't need your name to put on the sheet. There will be no balance given. There will not be an adding up of the pluses and a taking away of the minuses. God says that someone who is born dead in their sin, who has lived in rebellion every single day of their lives, that's what God says. That's not what I'm saying. That's what God says is the true nature of your character. That's what God says is the true outworking of your nature. God says that you stand condemned already. You are condemned already. It's not a future prospect. It is a present reality. If you were to drop dead at this moment in time, and you were to be dead in your trespasses and sins, then you are condemned. You are condemned even as you sit here now. You are condemned. I don't know the first thing about you. I may only know your name. I may only know your first name. I may not even know your name. But I can tell you that God says concerning you and concerning your life, you are condemned. And when you are condemned, then you are doomed. And you are doomed by God's wrath to a lost eternity. You are without hope and without God. Without hope and without God. And this torment and this pain will go on and on forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Are you willing to actually listen and accept that? I mean, I just read you verses from the Bible. That's all I've done. That's why I did. I gave you all those snippets to show you that's not what I think. George Bernard Shaw, the Irish playwright, wrote, "All the interesting people will be in hell." What a nonsense. What a nonsense. Hell is reserved for the devil. It is reserved for the angels who have accompanied him. It's reserved, Jesus says, for the wicked, the cowardly, the unbelievable, unbelievers, the sexually immoral, the sorcerers, the idolaters, and all liars shall have their place in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone. It's reserved for those who reject the gospel. Many, many will come to me in that day, Jesus said, and did we not sit with you? Did we not prophesy? Did I not cast out demons? And Jesus will say to them, depart from me, I never knew you. Never knew you. Coming to church doesn't save you. Saying I believe in Jesus doesn't do anything for you. The devil believes in Jesus. It means nothing. Means nothing. Unless you have the work of the Spirit in your life. And He has opened your eyes to see and your ears to hear the truth. Why will you die? Why will I die? I die because I sin. I was conceived in sin, I will die in sin. Why will you die? You'll die because you were conceived in sin. You will die in sin. But are you, when you die, are you going to go to that place of eternal punishment? Or by God's mercy and grace, will you humble yourself? And will you say to the one who led Adam down the garden path to his death, will you say, I've had enough. I've had enough of you in my life. And I am not going to let you take me to the hour of my death and say, find your own way home. I am going to get down on my knees and I'm going to buy myself at my bed tonight and I'm going to say, God, have dealings with me. Have dealings with me. Bring me from death to life. Death to life. Do you know the amazing thing? In our society today, the devil is actually beginning in our culture today to dress death up as something that is actually a celebration. When someone dies, it's no longer a terrible thing. It's now something to be celebrated. Imagine that. Imagine the rottenness of that. The rottenness of that. The rottenness of that. Not only does he take people to their death, he then says, following their death, well, really, let's have a party to celebrate it. Let's have a party to celebrate the destruction I have ensued in their life. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. We die because we sin. But we do not have to die the second death of eternal separation from God. Because tomorrow night
we will hear and come back, and we will hear of the amazing love of God, where He put His Son to death. He should never experience death. He put His Son to death that we might experience life. Now that is the good news.